Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarini. So Om Ganatimidandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigadave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. You. So, did you ever notice how people say these prayers many times and they don't think about what they're saying? They just say it really, really quickly and they're not thinking of the meaning of it. Well, guess what? That is called the Krishna unconsciousness movement. It's called Niyam Agraha. That is the Sanskrit name for the Krishna unconsciousness movement. Niyam Agraha. In other words, say all these prayers before you give a class or something like that. Blah, 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 blah. And you're not thinking of the meaning of them. You're missing out on all the nectar in Krishna consciousness. Because if you actually think about the meaning, like this one prayer I just recited, Om Ganatimirandasha, you know, that I was born in the darkness of ignorance. You actually think about it, how that basically, most of us, of course not all of you, we have some interested devotees with us today, but most of us were born in the darkness of ignorance. Om Ganatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. The ointment of knowledge, the spiritual masters opened my eyes with the ointment of knowledge as I was born in the darkness. Tasmai Shikurve Namaha. So anyway, so if you actually think about what you're doing, this is nectarian, and we are very fortunate that every morning during Mangalarti we have at least one devotee who's thinking about the words while she's dancing and doing the mudras. The rest of us are just like wondering, why do we get up in the morning, you know? But, you know, at least one devotee, it's actually ecstatic. Not going to mention any names to protect the innocent. So, she's actually that's the benefit of like these different types of dances where you manifest what you're thinking of or singing about, which is really amazing. Most of us, you know, we don't really manifest in our minds because we don't have to do anything different. For different parts of the kirtan, each part of the kirtan, we can just do the same old thing, you know. Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya. But, you know, this particular devotee, who should remain nameless, manifests and has to think about it. Actually, it's a meditation. It's actually a meditation on the Guru Vashika, meditation on the holy names, a meditation on Lord Nrsingadeva's prayer, meditation on Srila Prabhupada. Wow. Maybe in some future life I can meditate like that while I'm chanting Krishna's names. You know, most of us are just chanting Krishna's names. Oh, let's get our rounds done so we can get on to real life, which is eating prasadam. But she's chanting Krishna's names and dancing and just thinking, oh, Govinda, you know, playing the flute like that. When she hears the name Govinda, she goes like this. That's the mudra, right? Playing the flute. And Lord Chaitanya like that. So anyway, some future life I'll be fortunate enough to be absorbed in Krishna like that while I'm chanting his holy names. But right now, I can only pray for it in some future life. Okay, so let's get on. Enough of that. Let's get on with, and if any of you are interested in seeing it, it's available online Oh, someone sent me a chat window. Chat. Oh, Govinda said that, yeah. When people in this world perform activity, sometimes they understand what they're doing, sometimes they don't. Those who know what they are doing achieve success in their work, whereas ignorant people do not. Yes, very nice quote. So, anyway, so let's get on with the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which we've been missing for the last few days, even though we did have a celebration or commemoration of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Incidentally, today is the festival of Jagannath Mishra. So it's actually just as important as Gaur Purnima. Traditionally, oops, let me get that light. So traditionally, the actual festival, the big festival with the big eating, would be done today, not on Gaur Purnima Day. But because Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach Krishna consciousness, because traditionally these festivals were celebrated in a village, and everybody was around every day. So therefore, you could fast the whole night and just eat a little fruit at midnight, or when the moon rose in the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then the next day you could fill your belly. But because we are living in a different society where people don't come out for 2 days of a festival, they just come out one day, Srila Prabhupada made the adjustment, not only that the feast would be on the same day as the Lord's appearance, actually, which was not the tradition. Usually the feast is on the next day. Usually, you know, parents have a kid, usually they have the celebration the next day. Not in the evening, but usually the next day, and they invite everybody over, whatever they do. So because we are living in the modern world, Prabhupada made adjustments, not of the principles of Krishna consciousness, but of the basic, not of the principles, but the basic details, the details of worship. So therefore we have feasts on the same day as the Lord's appearance, which is, according to Vaishnava, injunctions, that's not generally done. Now if you look at the Gaudiya Math, they don't do it that way. But Prabhupada understood what to adjust to attract people. Now, 1 year I was with Prabhupada and Janmashtami, very fortunate to be with Prabhupada and Janmashtami, and Prabhupada asked the devotees what type of breakfast there was going to be at midnight. Of course, Prabhupada did keep us up till 3 o'clock in the morning before he allowed us to eat. So Prabhupada asked, and the devotees said, a very simple breakfast, Srila Prabhupada. Just some boiled vegetables and some fruit. And Prabhupada said, no, go out there and cook. And it was like 8 or 9 o'clock at night at that point. Go out there and cook and make something heavy prasad. And so midnight, there was a gigantic feast. Of course, it was at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the next day was Prabhupada's Vyasapuja Day, and everybody came for that. And there was more eating the next day, too. That was the year that we all fought for pieces of Prabhupada's cake. And I think I got a black eye, or we had, you know, wrestling matches to get pieces of Prabhupada's cake. It was quite an ecstatic experience. Very, very wonderful experience. Anyway, so Prabhupada understood that preaching is the essence. So as far as when you break your fast, or when you, or what you eat, or who comes, Prabhupada adjusted it. However, if one is in the village just with devotees and not any guests, and you're all going to be there the next day, don't have the feast at midnight. Or don't have the feast at moonrise, in the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or just eat some fruit and then have a feast the next day, if you can do that. But Prabhupada was very practical. He knew how to attract the whole world to Krishna consciousness. So anyway, because imagine if we had a big festival last night, and then at the end we gave people some apples. Now people would not be very happy. Even one older lady came to me this morning. She shall remain nameless. She's like my mother. She came to me this morning. She said, "Finally, there was a real feast. A scrumptious, delicious feast." I'm actually being a little dramatic. But it was like that. The mood was there. Finally, finally. So, you know, people need that. People need that. What can I say? You know, everybody needs, not everybody. Me, I just retired and had some buckwheat. So I just ate the same thing I eat any other day. No feast for me because I'm old. And that means I want that, because of that, I want to live. Not to say that those who eat the feast don't want to live, but I have to be very, very careful. Like Prabhupada said, for a young person, they can make the mistake of eating too much, and an old person should make the mistake of eating too little. So, oh, we've got a note here. It's Jai Radhika's birthday today. Happy birthday, Jai Radhika. It's also the birthday of one of my disciples in Germany, Radha Raja, who some of you may know. And I had a one-hour birthday party with him today by Zoom with devotees from all over the world. So anyway, so the point is we do what's practical for presenting Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada was eminently practical about spreading Krishna consciousness without breaking any of the principles of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was so practical. The way he started the movement, he allowed people to dance in any sort of fashion at 26 Second Avenue. He allowed people to play the strings from a piano that was broken. Can you imagine that? He had a piano. There was a piano that was broken. I guess it was turned up on its side or something like that. And a devotee would strum on the strings of the piano. He had a bass drum there. In Harinam. There's one video of that. Prabhupada was just interested in bringing people to Krishna consciousness, like his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was ready to do anything. You know, even roll biddies, you know, little Indian cigarettes, for the workers who were building a temple, or other things like that. So we should think in the same way. Our business is to reach out to others. And the purpose of the feast is not so the devotees could just like feed themselves, but the purpose of the feast is to reach out and bring others to Krishna consciousness. That's the point. That's what should make us happier than anything else. When someone comes to Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. Okay, on that happy note, that brief introduction. Which book should we go to next? I already asked that question. I don't know why that's there. We're already on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. All right, so let's go to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. All right, here we go. We are talking about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. This is the last chapter in the Adi Lila, chapter 17. And there's a lot of verses in this chapter. I think it's over 300 verses in this particular chapter. Let's go. Garigya sabaloka kariye kirtana kajirabhaye swachanda nahe chamat Kitamanaha. Returning home, all the citizens began performing Sankirtan. But because of the order of the Kazi, they were not carefree, but always full of anxiety. So let's reiterate what was spoken about before in this chapter. The Kazi told the devotees, no more Sankirtan, no more chanting in the streets. You can chant softly if you like, but no more chanting in the streets. And the reason the Kazi said that, although it wasn't elaborated previously in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is that the Brahmins were very addicted to ritualistic activities and certainly did not want the Shudras participating or the Vaishyas or anyone in the lower caste participating in what they considered to be religious activities. And of course, the topmost religious activity is Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnur. They didn't want their monopoly disturbed. Monopoly is not the name of a game, or maybe it is the name of a game, but it means that someone has an exclusive right to do something. And the Brahmanas had previously an exclusive right to do Brahminical activities or spiritual activities. And that's how they made their money. So they were very upset. So they complained to the Kazi. And they said, these devotees, they're chanting the names of God loudly. And this is disturbing God, disturbing the Hindu religion. Therefore, stop them. And therefore, that's why the Kazi stopped them. Because of the Brahmanas. Not because he was a Muslim, but because the Brahmanas complained. And as I mentioned previously, that happened in several countries in the world that the Brahmanas complained, those Hare Krishnas, they are taking business away from us. So therefore, in some countries, we were prohibited from entering. And if we wanted to enter the country, we had to take our neck beads off and act like little demons. Okay, so let's continue. Tasabaraham tere vaya prabhu mane jani kahite lagiya lagila loke siguro dagiyani. Understanding the anxiety within the people's minds, the Lord called them together and spoke to them as follows. Nagare, nagare, aji, karimu kirtana, sanjakale kara sabe, nagara mandana. In the evening I shall perform Sankirtan in each and every town, therefore you should all decorate the city in the evening. At that time, Navadvip was composed of 9 small cities, so the words Nagare, Nagare are significant. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to perform kirtan in each of these neighboring towns. He ordered the city decorated for the function. Sandhyati dietu sabedwala gare gare dekakona kajihasi. More mana kare. In the evening, burn torchlights in every home. I shall give protection to everyone. Let us see what kind of kazi comes to stop our kirtan. Etakai sanjikale chale goro raya kirtanera kaila prabhu tina sampradaya. In the evening, Lord Gaurasundara went out and formed 3 parties to perform kirtana. This is a scheme for performing kirtana in a procession. During Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, one party was composed of 21 men, 4 people playing mridangas, 1 leading the chanting, and 16 others striking karatals, responding to the leader chanter. If many men join the Sankirtan movement, they may follow in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and form different parties according to the time and number of men available. Age sampradayen richa kare hari dasa majena che acharya goshani paramahulasa. In the front party danced Thakur Haridas. And in the middle party danced Advaita Acharya with great jubilation. Pache Sampradaya Nricha Kari Gora Chandra Tandra Sangi Natsivule Prabhu Nityananda. Lord Gaurasundara himself danced in the rear party, and Sri Nityananda Prabhu moved with Lord Chaitanya's dancing. Vrindavana Dasa Giha Chaitanya Mangale Vistari Varniya China Prabhu Kripa Bale. By the grace of the Lord, Srila Vrindavana Das Thakur has elaborately described this incident in his Chaitanya Mangal, now called the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Hey Mata Kirtana Kuri Nagare Vramila Vramite Vramite Sape Kaji Dwarre Gila. Performing Kirtan in this way, circumambulating through every nook and corner of the city, they finally reached the door of the Kazi. Tarja Garja Kari Loka Kari Kula Hala Gorachandra Vale Loka Prashaya Pagala. Murmuring in anger and making a roaring sound, the people under the protection of Lord Chaitanya became mad through such indulgence. The Kazi had issued an order not to perform kirtana, congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. But when this was brought up to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he ordered civil disobedience to the Kazi's order. Lord Chaitanya and all his devotees, naturally enthusiastic, although agitated, must have made a great noise with their loud cries. Of course, this is all non-violent civil disobedience. So it's not that Gandhi originated this. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the originator of all these things. Kirtanera dvanite kaji lukai lagare tarjana garjana shuni nahaya vahire. The loud sound of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra certainly made the Kazi very much afraid, and he hid himself within his room. Hearing the people thus protesting, murmuring in great anger, the Kazi would not come out of his home. The Kazi's order not to perform Sankirtan could stand only as long as there was no civil disobedience. Under the leadership of the Supreme Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the chanters, increasing in number, disobeyed the order of the Kazi. Thousands assembled together in foreign parties, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and making a tumultuous sound of protest. Thus the Kazi was very much afraid, as naturally one should be under such circumstances. In the present day also, people all over the world may join together in the Krishna consciousness movement and protest against the present degraded governments of the world's godless societies. Let me just turn up the volume a little bit. Hold on a second, because it's not that loud. And protest. Let's see. Hold on a second. Let me just change the order, the settings. Okay. That's better. And even better. Okay. Let me just adjust this. I protest against the present degraded governments of the world's godless societies, which are based on all kinds of sinful activities. Srimad Bhagavatam states that in the age of Kali, thieves, rogues, and fourth-class people who have neither education nor culture capture the seats of governments who exploit the citizens. This is a symptom of Kali Yuga that has already appeared. People cannot feel secure about their lives and property, yet the so-called governments continue and government ministers get fat salaries, although they are unable to do anything good for society. The only remedy for such conditions is to enhance the Sankirtan movement under the banner of Krishna consciousness and protest against the simple activities of the worlds, of all the world's governments. The Krishna consciousness movement is not a sentimental religious movement. It is a movement for the reformation of all the anomalies of human society. If people take to it seriously, Discharging this duty scientifically, as ordered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the world will see peace and prosperity instead of being confused and hopeless under useless governments. There are always rogues and thieves in human society, and as soon as a weak government is unable to execute its duties, these rogues and thieves come out to do their business. Thus, the entire society becomes a hell unfit for gentlemen to live in. There is an immediate need for a good government, a government by the people with Krishna consciousness. Unless the masses of people become Krishna conscious, they cannot be good men. The Krishna consciousness movement that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra still has its potency. Therefore, people should understand it seriously and scientifically and spread it all over the world. The Sankirtan movement started by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Majjhakanda, 23rd chapter, beginning with verse 241, which states, "My dear Lord, let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet." Following Lord Chaitanya's chanting, all the devotees reproduced the same sound he chanted. In this way, the Lord proceeded, leading the entire party on the strand roads by the bank of the Ganges. When the Lord came to his own ghat, or bathing place, he danced more and more. Then he proceeded to Madai's ghat. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Lord who was known as Vishwambara, danced all over the banks of the Ganges. Then he proceeded to Marakunal Ghata, and then Nagariya Ghata, and traveling through Ganga Nagara, reached Shumulia, a quarter at one end of the town. All these places surround Sri Mayapur. After reaching Shumulia, the Lord proceeded toward the Qazi's house, and in this way he reached the door of the Chan Qazi. Udatta lokavange kajiragara pushpavana vistari vandila giha dasa vrindavana. Naturally, some of the people who were very much agitated began to retaliate the Qazi's actions by wrecking his house and flower garden. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has elaborately described this incident. Sounds very similar to when the American Congress was attacked. But this is spiritual, and that was done out of anger and was completely mundane and hateful, as we'll see later on. Tave Mahaprabhu Tara Dwarete Vasila Bhavyaloka Pathaya Kajire Bolaila. Thereafter, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reached the Qazi's house, he sat down by the doorway and sent some respectable persons to call for the Qazi. Dura ahite aila Qazi mata noyaya Kajiraiva saila prabhu samana kariha. When the Qazi came, his head bowed down, the Lord gave him proper respect and a seat. Some of the men in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's civil disobedience movement were agitated because they could not control their minds. But the Lord was thoroughly peaceful, sober, and unagitated. Therefore, when the Qazi came down to see him, the Lord offered him proper respect and a seat because he was a respectable government officer. Thus, the Lord taught us by his personal behavior. In pushing our Sankirtan movement of Krishna consciousness, we might have to face difficult days, but we should always follow in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and do the needful according to the time and circumstances. Or, as Srila Prabhupada stated, that all of his followers should be perfect ladies and gentlemen. You know, we follow the etiquette that's present in society, and we follow Vaishnava etiquette. And in this way, people respect us, even if we have a different opinion. At least honest people will respect us. So, Prabhu Balena Hami Tomara Ay Lama Avyagata Hami Deki Lukaila He Dharma Kemata. In a friendly way, the Lord said, "Sir, have come to your house as your guest, but upon seeing me, you hid yourself in your room. What kind of etiquette is this? Kasi kae tumi haisa kurahaya toma shanta karaite rahinu lukaya. The Kazi replied, "You have come to my house in a very angry mood. To pacify you, I did not come before you immediately, but kept myself hidden." Ebe tumi shanta hoyele asimililan bagyamora tomahena atiti failan. Now that you have become pacified, I have come to you. It is my good fortune to receive a guest like your honor. Grama sambande chakravarti hoyamora chacha deha sambande hoyite haya grama sambanda shuncha. In our village relationship, Nilambara Chakravarti Thakur was my uncle. Such a relationship is stronger than a bodily relationship. The Prophet explains the social situation in those days. In India, even in the interior villages, all the Hindu and Muslim communities used to live very peacefully by establishing a relationship between them. The young men called the elderly members of the village by the name Chacha or Kaka, uncle, and men of the same age called each other Dada, brother. The relationship was very friendly. There were even invitations from Muslim houses to Hindu houses and from Hindu houses to Muslim houses. Both the Hindus and the Muslims accepted the invitations to go to one another's houses to attend ceremonial functions. Even until 50 or 60 years ago, the relationship between Hindus and Muslims was very friendly and there were no disturbances. We do not find any Hindu-Muslim riots in the history of India, even during the days of the Muslims' rule over the country. Conflict between Hindus and Muslims was created by polluted politicians, especially foreign rulers, and thus the situation gradually became so degraded that India was divided into Hindustan and Pakistan. Fortunately, the remedy to unite not only the Hindus and Muslims, but all communities and all nations can still be implemented by the Hare Krishna movement on the strong basic platform of love of Godhead. Very, very interesting. So in other words, Prabhupada here is indirectly accusing the British of doing something in politics that's called divide and conquer. In other words, if you want to get rid of your enemy, the best way is to take two groups, your enemy and another group, or your two enemies, and turn them against each other. And they get rid of each other. And it's very interesting in Lord Ramchandra's pastimes, when he was attacked by the 14,000 Rakshasas after he had given Surpanaka a nose job. And other jobs too. He had cut off her nose. Lakshman cut off her nose. For a variety of reasons, don't blame Lakshman. I'm not going to tell the whole story now. He was attacked by the 14,000 Rakshasas. What did Lord Ramchandra do? He employed the same technique. But how did he employ it? He shot an arrow of illusion. And that arrow of illusion caused the 14,000 Rakshasas to look at each other and see that each and every Rakshasa looked like Lord Ramchandra, and so they started to attack each other and they killed each other off. And that's the best way. If you ever have enemies, that's the best way to deal with them. Divide and conquer. You just go to one enemy and you say to this enemy, "That other enemy of mine hates you." And you go to the other enemy and say, "That other enemy of yours, of mine, sorry, hates you. And he's trying to kill you." And so you just take a few steps back and watch them kill each other or destroy each other. And that's what the British did. They were expert in that. So Nilambara Chakravarti Haya Tamara Nana Se Samandi Hao Tumi Amara Bhagina. Nilambara Chakravarti is your maternal grandfather, and by this relationship, you were thus my nephew. Bhaginara Kroda Mama Avasya Sahaya Matulera Parada Bhaginana Loya. When a nephew is very angry, his maternal uncle is tolerant. And when the maternal uncle commits an offense, the nephew does not take it very seriously. This is also describing the village relationships. Many times you'll encounter people in India who say, oh, this is my brother, this is my uncle, or even this is my father, and you'll find out that they have no blood relationships, but the village relationship is or was very strong. And still is in the small villages in India. So that's the scenario. E mata dunhara katha haya tare tore bitare raharita kaya vushite na pare. In this way, the Kazi and the Lord talk with each other with various indications, but no outsider could understand the inner meaning of their conversation. Prabhu kahi prashna lagi ailama tomara stane. Kaji kahe agya kara ye tumara mane. The Lord said, my dear uncle, I have come to your house just to ask you some questions. Yes, the Kazi replied, you are welcome. Just tell me what is in your mind. Prabhu kahe go dugda kao gavi tumara mata rishahana upajaya tate tinhon vata. The Lord said, you drink cow's milk, and therefore the cow is your mother, and the bull produces grains for your maintenance. Therefore, he is your father. Pita mata mari cow, cow, eva kon dharma, kon bale kara, kara tumi e mata vikarma. Since the bull and cow are your father and mother, how can you kill and eat them? What kind of religious principle is this? On what strength are you so daring that you commit such sinful activities? Wow. Everyone can understand that we drink the milk of cows and take the help of bulls in producing agricultural products. Of course, in those days, the bulls were used to pull the plow. And, of course, that's very ecological. If you're using machines, it's not ecological. Definitely not ecological. A tractor cannot reproduce itself. A tractor cannot provide spare parts or heal itself. A tractor is just a machine. Now, the living entity of bulls can reproduce themselves. In fact, they like to reproduce themselves. They enjoy it. Therefore, since our real father gives us food grains and our mother gives us milk, with which to live, the cow and bull are considered our father and mother. According to Vedic civilization, there are seven mothers, of which the cow is one. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu challenged the Muslim Kashi. What kind of religious principle do you follow by killing your father and mother to eat them? In any civilized human society, no one would dare kill his father and mother for the purpose of eating them. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu challenged the system of Muslim religion as patricide and matricide, that means killing father and mother. In the Christian religion also, a principal commandment is, what? Thou shalt not kill. Nevertheless, Christians violate this rule. They are very expert in killing and in opening slaughterhouses. In our Krishna Consciousness Movement, our first provision is that no one should be allowed to eat any kind of flesh. It does not matter whether it is cow's flesh or goat's flesh, but we especially stress the prohibition against cow's flesh because according to Shastra, the cow is our mother. Thus, the Muslims' cow killing was challenged by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, when we ask Christians, why are you killing, they mistranslate the statement in the Bible. He said, well, the Bible just says thou shalt not murder. But actually says thou shalt not kill. And actually, there's a statement in the Old Testament that says, he who kills an ox, of course, is a bull, is the same as he who kills a man. And you find in Srila Prabhupada's dealings with Christians, Prabhupada would continually harp on that particular point. He really wouldn't get into sophisticated philosophical discussions with Christians. I mean, once in a while he would appreciate their devotion to Lord Jesus, but generally, when he was in a one-to-one situation with a Christian in a dialogue, he would say, Jesus says, thou shalt not kill. Or the Bible says, thou shalt not kill. Why are you violating that commandment? And generally, the so-called Christian would squirm and try to make so many excuses. I remember one time I was preaching to many Benedictine monks, and I was explaining this to them. Not only does it say in the Bible, thou shalt not kill, but in Saint Benedict's injunctions for his monks, and he formed a whole group of monks called the Benedictine monks, obviously, he said you should not eat meat unless it's necessary for your health. And so, visiting with these particular monks who happened to be in Butler, Pennsylvania, where Srila Prabhupada first came, preached in America. He actually didn't first come to America in Butler, but he first preached. He came to America in Boston Harbor. So anyway, so they would make so many excuses up, saying, well, we need it for our health. It's cold climate, so we need to eat meat. And they were raising cows for slaughter. And not only were they raising cows for slaughter, but they would drink liquor. And from time to time, different monks. This is not to cast aspersion on Christians or monks in general, but this particular group, from time to time, they would get drunk and smash cars, which were replaced by the diocese because they had a lot of money. A DUI, driving while intoxicated. So, anyway, so that's Prabhupada's experience and also my experience with many people who profess the Christian religion. Of course, a true Christian is not going to eat flesh. So let's take some questions now. Let me stop the sharing. Give me 1 second to unmute you. Okay. Who has a question? No one.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Oh.
Dandavat Pranam. Dandavat Pranam.
Good to hear from you.
Sorry, Maharaj. I'm in the car, so I can't turn my video on. But Dandavat Pranam to you. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Good to see you. I mean, good to hear you. The better to hear
you. Thank you. Just in relation to the Chand Kazi story, we were just actually talking about that in Gaura Purnima, and there was a little skit on it as well. So Chand Kazi was... Is that right that he was Kansa in his previous birth, is it?
Yes.
Some people say that. Some people say that. Some people say that Nawab Hussein Shah was. There's a difference between the Chand Kazi and the Nawab Hussein Shah. But it's possible. I've heard that statement before.
Yeah, okay. That's why I just want a clarification because we heard that as well on the day, and I wasn't sure about it. So,
yeah, I've heard both statements. One that it was the Nawab Hussein Shah, and the other one it was the Chand Kazi.
Yeah, yeah, maybe... okay. So, Maharaj, in the same sense, I just wanted to understand, like Srila Haridas Thakur, for example. I understand that he is. I'm not sure exactly what the terminology is. Is he a like manifestation of Lord Brahma?
He is considered to be a combined incarnation of Lord Brahma and Prahlad Maharaj.
Right. Right, okay. So does that mean that, because Lord Brahma is not, I know he's not Vishnu Tattva obviously, because he has an
Yeah.
end of his life. So how does and he's not quite a Jiva Tattva then, because how does he expand himself? How does he incarnate?
He is Jiva Tattva. Actually, Haridas Thakur is Jiva Tattva. And sometimes when you hear about these incarnations or appearances, and sometimes you hear that they're combined incarnations of two personalities, those incarnations could be empowered incarnations. In other words, empowered incarnation means like a Shaktavesh avatar, someone who is empowered by a particular individual. So there's both statements. How can someone be a combined incarnation of Lord Brahma, Haridas, and Prahlad Maharaj, since they are two different personalities? So they're, in one sense, you could say that they were empowered by both personalities.
Right,
And of
but
course, there's that story that Lord Brahma, there's a side story that Lord Brahma actually committed offenses by stealing or attempting to steal the coward boys and calves. And as a result of that offense, he had to take birth in a Muslim family in his next life. So there's that story also. But, sometimes you question how someone can be a combined incarnation.
So what I wanted to understand there, Maharaj, was that given, we know the soul cannot be created or destroyed, and if it's a jiva tattva soul, then how does another, how does he manifest himself as another entity? Like Lord Brahma is still present, of course, but he appeared as Haridas Thakur.
Well,
So
actually, that's a good question. A pure devotee can manifest in one more than one place simultaneously, not unlimited places. In the Brihadbhagavatamrita, we find Narada Muni, who is a pure devotee and jiva soul. He's present in many different levels of the Lord's manifestations, both spiritual and material manifestations. So
right.
Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said, and the acharyas say, that a pure devotee can be in two places simultaneously.
Wow,
Not
okay.
unlimited places like Krishna. Krishna can be in unlimited places simultaneously doing different things, but a pure devotee, for example, in the spiritual world, if one goes back to Godhead, one can be with Krishna and also Lord Chaitanya simultaneously.
Wow, okay.
So, and then also another point is, let's say you take him as an incarnation of Lord Brahma, and he's present during the pastimes of Haridas Thakur. But basically, for Lord Brahma, as far as he's concerned, it's just an instant that he's doing these things. Because when you compare the time experience in Lord Brahma's abode with the time experience we have on the Earth planet, it's just like, almost like, several instances.
Yep, that makes sense, Maharaj. Now, thank you
Course,
very much for clarifying.
that's another way of looking at it. But practically, Krishna can arrange a devotee can appear in more than one place. Krishna can also arrange a devotee can empower other personalities. He can manifest his presence through someone else. So you can be an empower you can also be a empowered manifestation of some great devotee. I mean, even in the story of Bilva Mangal Thakur, who was woken up by his interaction with a prostitute named Chintamani, Prabhupada described that Krishna used his spiritual master. His spiritual master spoke through the mouth of Chintamani, the prostitute. In other words, during that particular time, this particular lady was empowered by Bilva Mangal Thakur's spiritual master, which is
Wow.
pretty cool.
Yes.
But don't try that in Sydney.
No, Maharaj. Certainly not.
It's not your spiritual master will speak through the with the rascals in Sydney, you know. It's a, that's very specific. So anyway, so you can be in power incarnation. Like Prabhupada one time, it was, oh, here's an interesting story based on that. Prabhupada one time indicated that one devotee, and I'm not going to mention his name, he was basically, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was empowering him, manifesting through him. But the devotees heard it in the wrong way. And they considered that this particular devotee was an incarnation of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they began to worship him as an incarnation of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's an interesting story. And I'm not going to tell you the names. You know, it's just like there's no reason to tell you the name. And he was a very prominent devotee in the Krishna consciousness movement. And the devotees had on the walls of the temple that, you know, he's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has now appeared, not the exact words, as our temple president. And then, of course, then later on, when this devotee got married, they saw that that incarnation really wasn't such a good incarnation. When this particular sannyasi decided to get married, then there was an un, he un, unincarnated. So, now here's another story. Vyasa, no, here's a question. Vyasadeva is Jiva Tattva. That's what Prabhupada said. I don't know where you get your information that Vyasadeva is Vishnu Tattva. Prabhupada said he's Jiva Tattva. He's empowered by the Supreme Personality God. Prabhupada also said Parashuram is Jiva Tattva. So even you have some of the dasa avatars like Parashuram being Jiva Tattva. You have Buddha being Jiva Tattva. That, so when we talk about incarnations, there's the Shakta Vesha incarnation, in which the Shakti of the Lord, a particular Shakti of the Lord, incarnates like Prithu, who's considered an incarnation or avatar of the Lord. So it's the Shakti that descends. So the word avatar is quite interesting. Avatara means to cross down. So what crosses down in certain cases is not the person himself, but the Shakti of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's called Shakta Vesh Avatar. And sometimes the person also descends, and the Shakti also descends with the person. So that person is Shakta Vesh Avatar. So anyway, so it's not that we are Shakta Vesh Avatars. But the point is, the Shakti is what descends in many cases. Prabhupada made the point that Vyasadeva is Jiva Tattva. I don't know where you got your information that Vyasadeva is Vishnu Tattva. Maybe in some other incarnations or other yugas, he's Vishnu Tattva. But Prabhupada specifically said he's Jiva Tattva.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much for that. Haribol.
Well, you may have heard that in someone's class, but Prabhupada said that Vyasadeva was Jiva Tattva. Vyasa.
Sure.
Vyasa means to divide. He divided the Vedic literatures. There's Samas and Vyas. So originally the Vedic literatures were one, and then he divided into four. So who else has a question?
How do I? I'm sure you came across that before. I live on an island. I wouldn't mention the island. And it's absolutely, totally Krishna unconscious. I mean, if I was go wrong with some sandalwood piece on my forehead, they would like, I guess, throw rocks at me. But here I am trying to understand Krishna consciousness. And I'm like far away, no temples. And I'm very fortunate to listen to your teachings every day. How do I mean, go forward on this journey when I'm like totally isolated from everything else? But yet still, I chant every day. I read the Gita. I do the best I can. But the journey
There's absolutely no guidance there. And I mean, the people on this island, I mean, Krishna, I guess maybe in the next millennium, they will know what Krishna is. I don't think they give a about what Krishna is. So what do I do?
Sounds pretty dangerous to me.
It is.
Wow. So I would say I just sent you my email address so I can answer that question more thoroughly by email. If you look at the messages, yeah. So you can contact me by email, and basically, you chant the Lord's holy names, and hopefully you can be a vegetarian there, right?
Well, I am a vegetarian. I don't eat meat.
That's good. So they don't force you to eat meat there. So hopefully you can be a vegetarian. Hopefully you can chant. And that's all that's really required. You chant, you read, you pray to Krishna, and you associate through the internet. So you have some internet there. So you can definitely get a devotee association. And if you ever find anyone who's willing to hear about Krishna, you can also tell them about Krishna. I'm sure there must be a few pious souls there, whatever island that is.
I guess it's more of a materialistic place. I guess the material world took over there.
Okay, so yeah, so you can contact me by email, and maybe we can have some private conversations about this, and maybe I can help you in some way. Be Krishna conscious in your particular challenging situation. It sounds interesting. Maybe I should go there and visit you and preach to everyone there.
Well,
might be dangerous.
I wouldn't say dangerous, but first it was Catholicism, and then they totally... they don't even follow Catholicism. I mean, they just basically follow the world. They follow the world. That's it. It's just materialistic people and dangerous in their own way, because I guess listening to you, I realize that leads to, you know, the situation that they're in. And Krishna unconscious. So that's, yeah. You know, so I was wondering, well, how could I survive? I'm like standing in the middle trying to be Krishna conscious, and there's absolutely no one who is. So it's just a real confusing situation to be in.
Maybe if you contact me personally, I can find some devotees from where you are. Because there are devotees actually all over the world, even in the strangest places imaginable. So, I mean, let's keep in touch. You know, write down my email address, because it'll disappear when we go offline here. And maybe I can help you, and then eventually we could send Pran Govinda on his sannyas mission. Because he needs a challenge. You know, he's just there in Alachua, living a very comfortable life, getting prasadam every day, you know, just like, I tried to rescue him from Alachua, but the sannyas ministry wouldn't let me do it, because they say he has a mission to preach to all the old people in Alachua, all the old proper disciples, and bring them back to Krishna consciousness. So I tried my best, but after a while, when he accomplishes his mission, he'll be ready for like some challenges to try to help people. So anyway, the main thing is, write to me, and then we'll keep in touch, and I can speak to you personally after you've contacted me. So thank you very much, Andy. It's nice to speak to you. I mean, I actually have people I've guided in different Muslim countries where they couldn't admit that they were Krishna conscious, or else they'd be killed and imprisoned by the government. Actually initiated one person in a country who couldn't even admit to his wife that he was a devotee, and because his wife would turn him in to the government and they'd kill him. It's pretty heavy.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad, you know, where I'm at. I mean, it's like, just like you read something, how they would be chanting and you know, people would mock you. I guess it's a level of ignorance, you know, and that's all it is, you know. It's not like they would come after you. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, let's keep in touch, and then we can deal specifically with the situation, and I can help you. Sounds like a challenge for Pran Govinda. So, all right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. I think we have to end now. It's very interesting. Interesting point. We need some challenges to spread in spreading Krishna consciousness. So we'll see everybody tomorrow evening, same time, same station. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.